Today, from the Tasmanian property market front line. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, Wealth Analytics Post, covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And I'm joined today by Matt Lawler from Hobart. Hi, Matt.
G'day, man.
Great to have you on board, and thank you very much for spending a bit of time with us. Now, you are in the real estate business based in Hobart, and this is a great point because I really want to get to understand more about what is going on down there. There's a lot written about Hobart and how buoyant it is and how everything's, amazing. But let's start at the beginning. What's it like on the ground there at the moment? What are you seeing?
It's many markets. I think it's a tale of many markets. I think that's the reality. I think it's yourself who uses the idea of needing to go granular, and I think that's definitely the case in Tasmania at the moment and Hobart itself. And it's segmented. Obviously, first home buyers are a pretty hot property at the moment, or hot prospect at the moment in terms of trying to get into that market, and lots of buoyancy. I mean, lots of even one today, it's 25, 30 groups through, and part of that is really around the stock levels that we have on the market at the moment are very low, actually at near record lows. So I think that's contributing somewhat to, I suppose, a bit of a, just trying to take the opportunity and get in while you can, particularly in that first home buyer segment, as I said. When you move through to sort of 600,000, 700,000, 800,000, and probably the Sydney size and the Melbourneites are jumping up and down at the moment thinking, where in the world can you get a property for that? But that is our sort of starting to get into the more premium property here. That is definitely a little bit slower than you're probably used to here on the ground in Hobart. But ultimately, yeah, it's many markets. And it doesn't matter whether you're looking at postcodes, southern Hobart, north Hobart, or whether you're going into the regional areas, northwest coast, Launceston, et cetera, they're different markets and probably for different reasons. And unless you understand those reasons, I think it's a bit naive to probably just put a broad brush over the entire market here. And there's lots of different things going on.
And that's really the point, isn't it? And I keep saying it, I'll say it again. You can't just take these high-level statistics that are thrown out as, Hobart market or Sydney market, because it is a market of many markets and they're moving in different directions. Now, with regard to first-time buyers, what is affordability like? Because, of course, the income profile, mostly in Tasmania and particularly around Hobart, is not that flash relative to prices at the moment, is it?
No, and it's it is an interesting one. I mean, I'm not encountering personally, deals falling over for finance at the moment. I think that's probably ultimately the litmus test. I mean, if finance extensions are required all the time, and then a certain percentage of those finance arrangements are falling over, it's probably a bit of a leading indicator that ultimately structurally underneath there's some real big concerns, but. But right now, not seeing it in the first home buyer market. I mean, almost all deals are completing, barring maybe purchase of preference or something like that, where they've decided to opt out of the deal, prior to completion or prior to going unconditional. So it's but I think overall the market in that sector, in that area, is holding up pretty well for first home buyers, and I think primarily. It's because they're prepared when they're going to market. I mean, because the stock levels are so low, you only need to miss out once or twice before you start getting really serious about getting all your ducks in a row so that when you are actually in a competitive offer situation, that you're putting your best foot forward.
Right. And that's always a good advice wherever you're thinking of buying, isn't it? There's work to be done before you actually put the bid in, right? And partly to understand what is affordable for you as a particular household, but also to understand what the dynamics are. And again, that's really important. My observation is from my surveys that some people just don't do the work, so they go in unprepared and then they get caught out. But being prepared pretty important. Now, we had a look a little while ago at a couple of particular postcodes, and Newtown and the Lena Valley, which is quite interesting because the price movements in those two locales, which are very close to Hobart, are a bit different. You know, my observation was that Newtown, the prices were relatively flat over the last few months, whereas up the valley, there was more momentum. What's the difference between those two particular areas?
I think I would say, I mean, I know one of your segments that you look at is, I suppose, that I think it's the free affluent or one of those categories. And I think that probably lends itself to more the Newtown market. Certainly, I would say a bit more probably similar if you're in the Melbourne market to a Richmond or something along those lines. And so it's sort of that close-to-town market. You're close to all of the shopping precincts, the cafes, the restaurants. Ultimately, you could ride to work or something like that if you wanted to jump on a bike. So it's pretty close, but still only literally, 5 minutes from the CBD. Whereas Lenna Valley is definitely more the demographic, I think, in looking at some of the data there, is it's historically been a bit of an older age group, but as families are moving to the area, some blocks of land have opened up for development. That is becoming what I would call middle Australia, maybe leaning towards upper middle Australia at the moment. And so that's the main difference in those two suburbs.
Mm, and that's really the point, again, to underscore it. Mm. You know, there are some different dynamics because of the different demographics, and that then speaks to the type of property that's there, the type of buyers and sellers that are there. And, one of the observations that I have is that there are a number of people who have actually sat on or sitting on a reasonable amount of equity at the moment because, of course, there were significant price rises up in the area over the last few years. And if, in fact, those price rises are sort of easing off, then some people may decide to sell now to release equity to be able to actually use the equity elsewhere. Whereas if you've been there for a relatively long period of time but don't really want to sort of shift, then just staying put may make more sense. But from a property investment perspective, that's quite an interesting observation because the yields generally have been better in and around Hobart relative to the rest of the country, 4 to 4.5% typical gross yields. But it looks to me as though that could be under pressure now because the rents do seem to be easing back.
Mm. And I think that's indicative of the Airbnb properties that have come onto the long-term rental market. With the borders closing here, our tourism really has been decimated. I mean, there's just nothing going on in that space. And so you do see a lot of investors buy those properties in that sort of inner circle, within sort of 5Ks of the CBD, and really for the purpose of Airbnb. And that when that market's completely at a standstill, you can't bleed money forever. I mean, ultimately, you need to either throw it onto the long-term rental market. And it was interesting to see the trend. A lot of them first came onto the short-term rental market, 3-6 month leases, I think with the hope that the borders would be opening up for summer here. With the announcement a couple of months ago that the borders were shut effectively until December 1st, that may be changing now. But then it saw a lot of those short-term rental properties come onto the longer-term rental market, which did push down those yields. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens again because, with an excess supply of, rentals on the market at the moment, it's definitely a renter's market. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Go back 12 months and it is so difficult to get a rental in Hobart within, 10 minutes walk of town, something like that. I mean, it's the yields were very, very healthy for a long time, which obviously drove prices up in terms of their values. So, it will be interesting to see what happens with that space as, potentially the borders relax but ultimately, I mean, it got to a point there was so much stock, my understanding was that there was lots of agencies not taking on the short-term rental market. It was just so much. And we wanted, there was just a more of a lean to say that the agents would take on the properties on a 12-month minimum, due to the excess that was coming their way.
Mm. And do you think that's going to then perhaps make some investors wonder whether they should continue to hold property there? I'm seeing asked because in my surveys, there does seem to be a bit of a rise of property investors saying, maybe now is an interesting time to explore whether I should be putting my property on the market rather than holding it, if in fact the rental yields are continuing to fall and the value of property may or may not go higher from this point, looks a bit more uncertain than it was a year or two ago.
Certainly for investors. I mean, I think there's still value for investors on the fringes. Again, it's just, the yields you can still get, it's between 5% and 7% on most of those sort of properties. Northern suburbs of Hobart, 15, 20 minutes out of town, something like that, you're still getting fairly good rental yields. And so I think that market is, I think the suburbs that we would say are probably more gentrifying, typically low socioeconomic in years gone by, who are now starting just through, urban crawl and the need to access property and affordable property, those investors are still being able to get relatively good yields. It's when you're coming closer back to town where you're starting to look at, because a lot of that infrastructure and the properties themselves in Hobart, I mean, you're talking, they've been around for 100, 150 years, a lot of these properties. You just can't knock, a lot of them are protected by, heritage and things like that. So this is not the type of situation you can roll up with a bulldozer and knock down and put up a complex or an apartment complex or something like that. I mean, it's a little bit more difficult for developers here to do that. We've got building restrictions in terms of the height in the city. They've got to be under a certain level. So it's in terms of the capacity for development, it really is forcing developers to move to the fringes of Hobart, 20, 30 minutes out of town.
Okay, that's very interesting.
If you can get it now, because it's very even very difficult, you're sort of now looking at even 45 an hour out of town.
Mm, yeah, and for Hobart, that's a long way out, isn't it?
Yeah, very long way out, they tell me.
And what about the interstate interest? Because, of course, there were quite a few, particularly investors, but perhaps more than investors, looking at Hobart and Tasmania being, cheap and, good air quality, all of those good things, right? Is that still going on, or are you seeing less of that now?
I think the brakes have gone on. There's no doubt about it. I think it's really just around clarity for investors at the moment. And I think a lot of that, the Melbourne demand is almost at a standstill. And I think the investors are sitting on the sidelines. I mean, for a little bit, and there's always those who are genuinely in the market and probably aren't so fazed by what's going on at the moment. But ultimately, it was nudging at one point, 15 to 20%, I think, of all those properties that investors were soaking up, that sort of demand in Hobart and across the state. So it's those have definitely come back, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's fallen to below double digits now. And it will be interesting to see when those quarterly results are published in the next in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. And it's an interesting observation, but in my mortgage stress surveys, in fact, Tasmania registers as the highest proportion of households in stress. Not big numbers, because of course it's a smaller population, but it's a function of the relatively high property values relative to income, firstly. Secondly, a large proportion of SMEs who are under the gun at the moment, quite a few of them, of course, associated with the tourist sector, which, as you mentioned earlier on, is obviously under some difficulty at the moment. As a result of that, there definitely are some worrying signs in terms of possibly even forced sales ahead. I'm not sure it's going to be a huge impact, but I just wondered whether you've seen any early signs of that yet in terms of people perhaps inquiring whether they should list or not.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, we're in a bit of a holding pattern at the moment, and whilst I think there's lots of conversations going on, we're not seeing that transferred the overall stock levels. I mean, we are at pre-GFC levels in terms of stock at the moment. I mean, it's in terms of numbers, it's around 1,780 properties in the greater Hobart area on the market. And to give people a bit of perspective, it was around 2012, that was nearly 5,000. I mean, it's come off a long way. And as those stock levels have come down, it's coincided with capital growth occurring. We've seen that boom where we had in Hobart over that same period. But it took, with those stock levels, I mean, it took the better part of 3 to 4 years for that stock to get from near 5,000 to under 3,000. So it does take a long way to work itself out. But in terms of the stress, it is a little bit hard to see at the moment because the holding pattern. I did note, I'm a bit of a numbers nerd when it comes to the property here, but I did note the Grattan Institute. I look at their data, and they publish declines in payroll and wages by federal electorate. And of the 151 federal electorates, Tasmania fares fairly poorly. At one point in the first couple of months of COVID occurring, I think we had something like 3 or 4 in the top 20, which is pretty alarming. And accounting for the Victorians at the moment, who have got about 8 in the top 10. We've got 3 of the next 10 worst right now. So it's sort of, just through the tourism, the students, drying up as well. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see structurally what happens. We've got a lot of SMEs here that are supported by those industries, and so it may result in forced sales down the track. Not really able to crystal ball that at the moment, but it is interesting. I mean, prices are patchy in some areas, and even in the regional areas. I noticed in say Northwest, Burnie, places like that. Whilst it has had it's been a very hot market for the last sort of few months. Certainly, the June quarter was astounding up there. 7-8% growth. I mean, it was ridiculous with what was going on. But I think a function of people looking to potentially move to a regional area and less people per capita, etc. But at the moment, Burnie is seeing increased stock levels for the last 4 months. And that has actually coincided with the median prices per week falling at the same time. So there's more stock coming to market, and those prices are the median price according to F2M, Property Research. Louis Christopher's data suggests that, the stock is going up and the prices are coming down. So how that translates into actual sold data and settlement data, we'll sort of watch and see, but places like that are absolutely susceptible to tourism being pretty low, and also other fringe places. The great Bridport, which is home to Barmbuga, one of the great golf courses in the world. You see, at the moment, I think it was in the lead up to the June quarter. I mean, they're at record prices. They were at record prices. The record weekly asking price, and it had been by far, it was something like 10-15% higher. During that June quarter, but that's collapsed now in this quarter. So whether that transfers to, again, the stock levels appear to be the same. It's a fairly low market, but in terms of the stock on market. But whether that translates to then vendors wanting to discount to make their properties more competitive in the market, we're going to see. But I think towns and rural areas like that, I think, are going to be a bit of a leading indicators as to what may transpose in the rest of the state.
No, I think you're right. And my data is also pointing to somewhat similar trends. And, the thing about stress is it's a very early indicator. It takes time to work through. The banks have only just started calling people to work out whether they can start repaying the loans if they've had a repayment holiday. And of course, we also had the announcement on Friday of changes to lending standards next year, which may give another kick to the market. We'll see. And who knows about that? A bit of a surprise, but not totally a surprise if you think about what the government's been saying about the importance of consumer spending. But it is, I think, my observation would be it's a market on the turn, basically in Hobart at the moment, and they're in Tasmania, and there are a number of externalities. The borders are shut. We know that the education sector has gone off the boil. In fact, there's been a number of layoffs there. We know that the tourist sector is very much reliant on local tourism rather than interstate or indeed international tourism. Those are such large components of the economy. So, Matt, one of the questions I had for you was, what's the situation with stock levels and particularly whether property is being held back? I'm thinking that in the context of the spring.
Yeah, I mean, people always talk about pent-up demand. I think there's pent-up supply. I mean, that's ultimately what I think is going to be happening. And I think people are just through to the uncertainty at the moment. us holding back that stock. They want clarity. They want clarity with the economy. You're a business owner. You want clarity with your tenancy arrangements, your mortgage reprieve. And so I think we're going to actually see, and it's been a tough year. I mean, let's not forget that. I mean, it's, I wouldn't be surprised if people just want to get through Christmas, get through the other, get to 2021 and then actually reset. Allowing for the fact they've got JobKeeper in place till March at the moment. Then all of the new credit, you know, flicking from a, basically a lender beware to a buyer beware model. And so I think people are just going to potentially want to wait and see what's going on. I think that's what is holding back the stock a little bit. It's just a lack of clarity in the market. And you see it. I mean, there's lots of things. It's not just local. It's geopolitics. There's lots of things going on globally. And so I think potentially autumn actually is where I'm looking. I mean, I think autumn is going to be, you know, maybe back end of summer into early autumn. I think that's where things are going to start to really get moving.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think looking at, again, my data, there's definitely a bit of a peak now, but a bigger peak, you know, February, March time. And people, I think, are hoping by then the virus will be a sort of a bit more under control one way or the other, and that some of the other uncertainties will have settled down. And I also, with you, think it's the SME sector that will really be the tipping point, particularly, I think, down in Tasmania and particularly around Hobart, because such a large proportion of the economy is supported by SMEs, and therefore how they fare and, you know, what they do is a critical determinant, not least because, of course, many of them are secured on property.
Interesting, man, because I think I heard you say a little while ago that is it something like a third of businesses are using their properties as collateral to get those business loans. And so that will be interesting to see what happens in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, it is. It's a quite consistent pattern, and watch this space. What about the agricultural sector? I mean, how's that faring? Are they still, you know, swimming with the tide or against the tide, do you think?
Under-resourced is what I'm hearing. I mean, there is absolutely a push from state government to get people, particularly on JobSeeker, picking the fruit, because by all reports, there's going to be a bit of a dearth. You know, this fruit's going to die on the trees if it's not picked. And I saw on one of the Sky News programs, might have been Peter Credlin's program, talking about potential doubling of fruit prices by the end of the year across Australia. And so that's definitely something that, the labour is required. And a lot of those tourists that come in, the students, the tourists, the travelling, they're the ones who are doing that low-level labour on the farms. And so that's going to be a bit of a watch and see, because ultimately, if it doesn't get picked, you can't sell it. And so, you get a bit of a situation where, farmers hurt, they've got bills and stuff and just like everyone else does. And, it's definitely going to be a watch and see.
Right. And then my last question is, what's the number one indicator that you look to try and get a read on where you think the market's going?
There's lots of things. I think right now it's weekly median asking price, because I can track that for the last decade, and you can get a runner line through it. You know exactly where the trend lines are. And to give you a bit of an idea, I mean, I looked at, I think it was the one we caught up on, Leonard Vale in Newtown. And I was tracking Louis Christopher's data, that weekly median asking price, in the lead up to the June quarter results being announced. And that data was only about half of 1% out in terms of the overall results for the suburb, albeit off relatively low volume. So it's probably easier to sort of get a gauge on where things are headed I think that's what punters really need to do at the moment as well, is be able to go granular, look at that data, because ultimately, I mean, you can get caught up in the broad brush statements. I mean, for example, that particular suburb was 8.5% down for the June quarter. But across Tasmania, it was still up 1.2%. Okay, even allowing for that, you know, some suburbs were a bit softer. So if you just read that, you know, Tassie's up 1.2%, you would miss the fact that in these fairly affluent suburbs, I mean, people were discounting to get out. And maybe that's a function of them pricing their properties at the start of COVID or just pre-COVID. The market just hit a brick wall in terms of the transaction volumes. And then you sort of get caught on the market and need to start discounting. And so, that type of data is what I find at the moment most helpful.
Mm, very interesting. And what about the other publicly available information, you know, like on the domains and the realestate.coms? I mean, how useful do you find that?
I'm not a huge user of those ones, only because it's I'll use it to track stock levels a little bit just to see what's happening, and I'll sort of overlay, you know, the realestate.com data with the RP data, but really I think the SQM stuff, and I just use the publicly available data. I don't have any extra premium services there at the moment, so I'm just using the publicly what's already publicly available. But it is, I mean, you need to just not look at one source. And I think that you've got to be intelligent about how you're getting your data together. And I think that's a big factor. If you're just reading one newspaper or you're just watching ABC News, you're going to miss it. And I think that's a part of it, is just being more intelligent about how you're gathering your data. And I'm a big believer in using that leading indicator data too, because ultimately, I mean, if you're pricing a property wrong at the moment, you've got an opportunity that property will just sit on the market for a necessary amount of time. And even allowing for the fact that we've only got 1,780 odd properties on the market in Hobart at the moment, 40% of them have been on the market for over 180 days,
yep,
which is hard to imagine. Really, I mean, with record low stock, you've still got a lot of stock sitting there that hasn't moved, and that's because it just wasn't priced to market properly when it happened. Some bad luck, maybe with COVID hitting, But ultimately, using that leading indicator data can really help buyers make sure that they're sort of positioning their offers sharply, but not overpaying, and also vendors just to get a real sense of where things are at genuinely in the market.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, as I always say, it's important to do the work, get granular, use multiple sources of information. Don't be misled by those high-level spruiking articles that are always around saying it's always the time to buy whatever's going on, right? I mean, more came out this weekend saying house prices are going to go higher because of the announcement on Friday from Frydenberg. So we'll see. Matt, I've really enjoyed speaking with you today. That's been a real insight into the local market. Perhaps we can touch base again down the track. If people want to get in touch with you, how's the best way to do it?
Just my email. Usually email or phone number. We'll provide it for people in the drop down, etc. But more than happy for have a chat Zoom, always handy at the moment too.
Yeah, good old Zoom. I'll put the contact details below, and I really appreciate your time today. Thank you very much for speaking with me, and we'll catch up down the track.
Terrific. Thanks, man. Good to chat.
Thanks. Cheers. Bye-bye.